Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, and again, we have a treat for the listeners today. Joining me is one of my favorite co-hosts, besides Al, when he joins me on the regular, but it's Corey Chadwick from Leesium. Corey, welcome to the show.
Robin, thanks for having me back. I feel like you don't need the besides Al part. That's a given, right? But so great to be back with you. We've had so much fun so far and definitely excited for this one.
Yeah. And one of the things that you will learn if you hang around Corey long enough is he knows a ton of great people. And I recently got an introduction and had my first call with this guest and it went so well. We just knew we had to record a podcast today. So today we're joined by Jessica Pezum, client partner at Bedford Consulting Group, where she leads the execution team and plays a strategic role in delivering executive search and leadership advisory solutions. With deep expertise across financial services, real estate, professional services, and private equity, Jessica has built a reputation for helping organizations identify and secure transformative leadership talent. Before joining Bedford, Jessica spent nearly a decade at CIBC, where she shaped leadership pipelines and succession strategy across capital markets, commercial banking, and wealth management. Originally trained as a lawyer, she holds a JD, which I'm assuming is Juris Doctorate. I don't know if I said that right, Jess.
Nailed it.
From Osgoode Hall Law School, very impressive. And an MBA from the Schulich School of Business, also very impressive, and is called to the bar. A unique combination that gives her a distinctive perspective on people, performance, and potential. At the heart of her work is a simple philosophy. Careers are deeply human stories, and the right leadership match can change not only an organization, but a life. I love that. Jess, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, quite accomplished, oh my goodness, in your bio. So I read these sometimes and I'm a little bit, you know, intimidated when I'm chatting with someone like you because you've done a ton in your life.
Don't be intimidated.
Well, the very first time we chatted, I just, you know, we got along right away and you were very approachable. So I appreciate you doing this. But I wanted to start with this. Your career began on that path to practicing securities law. And you pivoted somewhere along the way to executive search. How did that happen? Like, what inspired that pivot?
A couple of things. First of all, I think that unlike our parents where, you know, it was common to sit in one company and continue to progress through that company. You know, I mean, in my work all day, every day, I see people changing and shifting careers and taking different paths. So that is really what I did. I always thought that I wanted to be a lawyer and I really loved it. I really loved the pace of law. I really loved the work that I was doing. I had the opportunity to summer an article at a Seven Sister law firm. It was a fantastic learning ground. I met really great friends and people who I still keep in contact with today. And I really enjoyed the work and I loved the pace and the rush of closing a deal. Like it all really spoke to me. But the way that I grew up, Bedford is a family business. So it was founded by my father and my uncle, who are twin brothers. So talent was something that was always discussed at my dinner table. And it was something that was always part of my conversations growing up. And as a result, it was something that I developed a passion for really, really young. And it was something that I was always naturally really drawn to. And so when I looked at my career in law and I looked at how long it would take for me to impact talent in a meaningful way, I just made the decision that I wasn't willing to wait. And so I did take a bold leap and I had a career transition and I went to CIBC. And as you said, I spent quite a bit of time in progressive roles within the talent space at CIBC, right from campus recruitment all the way through to executive talent management. And I had the opportunity to work with fantastic leaders and really, really impressive people. And again, just a fantastic learning ground. Like, I don't have enough really good things to say at CIBC, and I very likely would still be at CIBC. But after I had my second child, my father and my uncle sat me down. And they gave me a very, very compelling sales pitch as to why it was time to join the family business and why we were going to practice what we preach in terms of succession planning. And Bedford is just such a fantastic business, and it's just a great place to work. It's a really great model, and it really blended sort of my love of deals with this talent piece that I've always felt passionately about. And so here I am, and you've read what I do. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about my story.
So I got to ask you, you were at one of the big law firms, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite shows ever.
Suits.
I'll name the characters. Of course, Harvey and Mike, right?
Yep.
How close to reality are those stories that we get to hear on Suits?
That was a long time ago for me, right? So like, I think that there were elements of it that, you know, could somewhat align, but a lot of it is very, very different. And from everything that I understand from my friends who are still, you know, partners in law firms, there's been a mass evolution since we were students. So I think a lot has changed even since we were students. We had a great time. We had a lot of fun. It was very much a work hard, play hard environment, but we really just learned a great deal.
And it's funny, just so we have a young advisor in our business, and he comes up to me one day, he says, okay, you're going to be Harvey and I'm going to be Mike, and we're going to work on deals together. So I thought this is perfect.
Yeah.
Jess, I wanted to ask you, because I've heard two sides of the story. It's a nightmare to work with family, or it's a blessing to work with family. For me, it was a blessing because before my dad passed away, you know, he said, hey, I'm going to hang up the skates. And we got to work together for a year. And I wouldn't give up those memories or that experience for anything. But I've also heard the other side. So from your perspective, what's it been like? Has there been any challenges or, again, some of those blessings for you working with family?
Or both?
You know what? I think it's a double-edged sword, honestly. Like, anybody who's telling you that it's a blessing without there being any challenges is not giving you, in my personal view, an upfront and realistic preview of what it is to work in a family business. I have a really unique family business in the sense that I'm working for twin brothers as well, right? So it's not just me working for my parent or me working for my uncle. There are multiple decision makers and multiple really important stakeholders at the table. There are so, so many benefits. I mean, one of the biggest benefits for me has been the opportunity to learn from both of them. And they have really unique styles, but they are both exceptional salespeople. They are both exceptional at business development. They've really shown me what it is to put forward a really compelling proposition. And what I'm constantly impressed with is their innovation and their desire to always be changing, always be better, always be improving, and always be keeping up with or exceeding the market from that perspective. But I think that on the flip side, there are always going to be challenges in a family business. And I think for me, especially coming from really large, well-established organizations like the law firm, like CIBC, to come into a small family business, I think that it was a big transition for me in terms of being used to a lot of process and being used to, in some ways, like maybe a little bit more bureaucracy. And so I've had the opportunity to really learn how to be a lot more agile, how to move faster, how to adapt quicker, because one of the benefits of the smaller business is you can make decisions really, really quickly. And ultimately, I think that what gave me the confidence that I would be able to do this and be part of this family business, because family is a really core part of who I am, was the fact that my father and my uncle have done it successfully for so long. Yeah. And so because they could do it, because they were able to put whatever was going on at work aside and still happily golf with each other, admittedly very competitively, yeah, every Sunday, as a result of that and their ability to do that and their ability to still very much have a family life in addition to having this very robust work life, gave me confidence that I'd be able to do the same.
Love it. So Robin, so Jess and I have known each other for a long time now. Jess is married to one of my closest friends, and everything that she's saying professionally, obviously, like, spot on, super smart person, but what an amazing person she is outside of work as well, and how much family means to her. I feel like you're almost underselling it here, Jess, but it just like a total package of awesome person. So I love hearing you talk about this.
Thank you.
Yeah. I got a question for you.
Okay.
You've helped lots of leaders navigate career transitions.
Yep.
Is there a particular story that stands out where helping someone make a move had a ripple effect that goes well beyond their career?
I think that you can kind of look at ripple effects in two ways, right? You can look at the ripple effect in an organization, and then you can look at the ripple effect for the person. So there have been many roles, but a couple that really come to mind that stand out, where you know that when you're putting the right person in the right role in the right organization, that magic can happen. And we've had some of those experiences, and I've had the pleasure and the benefit of really watching not only this person's career continue to grow within that organization, but also watching the meaningful impacts and changes that they have made to that organization and how that's shifted even within society. So within one of our clients where we had a social impact role that we put in, a vice president of social impact, which was a really interesting and different, and it's not a common role in Canada, but to be able to find the right person for that role and to watch how that organization has grown around that. They were always deeply rooted in social impact, but to see the shifts that have occurred as a result of that, that has been really fulfilling for me to know that I had a part to play in that, but also to see how that person has grown and how the organization has benefited. So I do think it's always a bit of a, like, there is the path of the person and then there is the path of the organization. And I think that the change, like, that's the magic for me. That's what fills my cup when I do my job.
Yeah, the ripple effect. I think it's lost on some people how we're all creating a ripple effect. And then leaders have a larger ripple effect, obviously. And the more senior you are in an organization, the bigger that ripple effect is. But it extends through work, through community, through families, through everything, right? And who you are and how you show up is just so important to everything. And not just once in a while when everything's lining up nicely, but when it's hard, when it's rough, and just doing it consistently. And so I hear you talking about that ripple effect that matters so much and impacts people so much, and it's inspiring.
I think that it's a piece that people don't necessarily really think about, right? They don't really think about that impact that they're necessarily having. And yes, of course, you can maybe identify it a little bit easier with leaders, but anybody and everybody within an organization has this ripple effect. Mm-hmm. They can have an action and that can ripple across positively or negatively, but hopefully positively, like in what we're talking about. And ultimately, I think that you don't have to be a leader to make that kind of an impact. It's just that those leaders' impact tends to be more obvious because they're more public often.
Yeah, that's a great point that you don't need the title, right?
No, you really don't. You don't need the title. I mean, if you think about the people in your life who have really impacted you, they're not necessarily your bosses or your, you know, I mean, I've had many people who've had an indelible impact in my life who are not people who would necessarily be well known. I can think of it all the way back to, like, in high school, the lady who would swipe our cards at the cafeteria and who I never had my, like, I just could not pull it together to have my card. And her name was Lorna, and she was the absolute best. And she snuck me food so frequently and, like, had an indelible, like, a meaningful impact in my life as a result. And we just had such a great relationship, and she would sort of roll her eyes. And then the next time she would double charge me. So, like, it all evened out in the end. But it doesn't have to be somebody who has, like, a big title within an organization to have that impact on people.
No, it really doesn't. Right? Like, people that you like, people that you trust, people that you respect, people whose lead you feel is worth following, even if, again, they don't have the title.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so nice to hear that, you know, you're referencing all the way back to high school, which is quite a number of years for most of us sitting on this call.
More than we'd like to talk about.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. But it's amazing. Like you said, it's not always your bosses. It's people, you know, adjacent to you and who have those impact over your life. And I love going back and having those memories. And I'm actually glad, Jess, you brought up two sides of the coin. And obviously, we try to keep things positive. But there's people who would negatively impact your life. And I remember I very purposefully made my circle smaller when I was about 35 years old. And I made it smaller because there were people that were just not aligned with where I was going in life, my values, and it was just a negative impact. And I saw the value of saying, love growing up with you, but we're heading in different spaces. And I hope they're happy today, but I know my life is better for doing that. And unfortunately, we've encountered that in our workspace as well. And we had to say goodbye to someone for the good of everyone else. And it's worked out really well. In the work that you do, I'd love to dive down into, because from my understanding, like, you work with a lot of high performing leaders.
I do.
Who, when you're placing them, I have to imagine, like, there's immense pressure there, right? Like, for them, you've placed them, they're there, they've got to show up and deliver those results. So how do you work with these people, though? Because when we talk about ambition, it's all great that we want to go out and deliver and do all these great things, but there's that human side and balancing out. We don't want this person to burn out either. So what's your key to success when working with these people, placing them, and knowing they're not going to be burnt out in a year? They're going to be able to contribute as long as possible to this company, and then hopefully eventually move on somewhere else and make an impact there. Because I just see when you're making that impact with someone, that's carrying forward with these other people. So I'd just be curious to hear a little more about that.
Again, like, I think that everybody is different, but I think that what has led Bedford to have what I'm very proud of, which is a 93% success rate 3 years post-hire. So that means that 3 years post-hire, the people who we're placing are still with the organization. They may not still be in that role. They may have been elevated into a different role, but 93%, which is a great number. And the way that we do that is we really spend a lot of time upfront focusing on getting to know our client, getting to know the culture, getting to know what they're looking for, and specifically for the role, what they're looking for. And so we have a proprietary competency exercise that we go through, and it's 60 competencies, and it's divided over 4 quadrants. There's 15 per quadrant, and we go through an exercise with them where we have them narrow down those 15 to the top 2. And then we talk about why. Why is it? Because, you know, these are all competencies that, you know, resilience, empathy, like these are all things everybody would want. So it's actually quite difficult to narrow it down. And we'd like to have all the decision makers in the room wherever we can, because what we get there is consensus. And we all get to a place of agreement about this. And then we take those competencies and they inform the rest of the search process. And so when we're armed with that information and when we know the client and we're really able to tell their story, that makes a huge difference in bringing in the right person. Because it's really important to note that the best person for the job is not always the right person for the job. Mm-hmm. Those are two different things.
Ooh, expand on that. I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into that.
So the person who might have all the bells and whistles and who might have all the things that you think that you're looking for may not be a good culture fit. If they're not a good culture fit, it really doesn't matter that they're exceptional. They're not going to be successful within your organization. They may have different aspirations. Maybe they're a VP finance and they want to be a CFO in 2 years, but that path doesn't exist within that organization. There's going to be frustration there if that happens. So it is more than just someone who checks all the boxes in terms of, I have all the things that I need in order to be successful from a technical perspective. Do they fit within the organization? Are they going to be a good fit to the leadership team? Are they going to work well with their boss? Will they work well with their peers? There's just a lot more that is involved than, yes, I have a CPA, and yes, I have M&A experience, and I have growth experience. It's more than that.
So Jess, I've got a question. This is a bit of a selfish question because I'm asking specifically for our company. So when we first launched in 2005, we did what everybody does, vision, values, all that kind of good stuff. You laminate them, you put them on the wall, and it fell off the wall one day, and Al puts it in the drawer, and you know, 15 years it sat there until we finally started growing as a company. And we said, oh, well, we should look at those again. So we actually took a lot of time and rewrote those. We called them our guiding principles this time. They are on the wall very sturdily. It's not going to fall, but we actually live them. We built them into scorecards now for everyone. How important is it if we're going out and we're looking for new people to bring on board? How important is it for those people to align with those guiding principles of the corporation?
Let me turn the question back to you.
Okay.
Do you think you could work with somebody who doesn't?
Ooh, good question.
I think it would be very challenging because the first one is improving the lives of our clients.
So, I mean, that really answers it, right?
Yeah, it sure does.
If you don't think that you can work with that person, then they're not going to be a good fit.
Good point.
That's why when we spend the time on the competencies up front, and that does get worked into our position profile, it gets worked into our scorecards, it gets worked in right through the process. It's to get at that alignment. It's really important. Hearing the conversation is really important because you hear where something might be a little bit more important to one person or less to another, but where they're willing to compromise, and you get them to a place of agreement so that you don't get down to your finalist candidate. And, you know, you like the person, but your partner doesn't like the person, and you are not aligned on the reasons why and what you're looking for. So the fact that you have your guiding principles and that they're up on your wall, that's obviously a critical part of your culture and who you are as an organization. And so if someone isn't going to align to those, listen, they don't necessarily have to be exact, and they can have other principles that are more important to them. But if they don't align with what you're looking to do, and if they are not pointing towards the same North Star that you're pointing towards, chances are it's not going to work.
Well, number six for us, if you do the first five, I always say you get to number six. Number six is the wow experience. So you're right. So if you're not giving the wow experience and you're giving the terrible experience, yeah, you're right. That's not going to align. That makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jeff, I'm sure throughout your experience of doing all this, you've seen the companies who they do put it up on the wall, but it just kind of stays there up on the wall. They're not actually living it. Mm-hmm. And so when you're exploring this culture fit, it's like, well, we say this, but are we actually living that? And then when push comes to shove, do we bend on all of our guiding principles or our values and do something different instead? I am curious about this because we're talking about culture fit and we know how important this is. And as you're saying, the more you can get really dialed in on culture fit, the better that organization is going to be, the better the experience is going to be for everyone involved. When organizations are talking about hiring for culture fit, though, it can sometimes limit diversity of thought, especially if it's a more particularly narrow culture fit. Mm-hmm. How do you guide clients then towards hiring for culture? How do you do it? And what difference does that make long term?
Again, it's so role specific, right? So I think it depends on the organization. It depends on what they're looking to do. Are they looking for a big transformation? If they're looking to transform something, diversity of thought is going to be really important because we want to do things differently than how they are currently happening. And most organizations today are going through some kind of transformation. Very few organizations are continuing on a status quo with everything that's coming our way, with everything that we've experienced from COVID through the tariffs, through the AI, through all the things that are happening and all the things that are being thrown at leaders. Most organizations are transforming. So I think that most organizations are quite open to a diversity of thought. And in Canada, I think that most organizations are quite open to diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging more broadly. Again, like, it really comes down to that cultural alignment and fit. So like, if you are somebody who brings that and you bring something that's different and it's not something that the organization is open to, it's not the right place for you. Because as a candidate, what we always tell our candidates is you have to remember you are interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. This is a two-way street. This is about, I'm kind of like a matchmaker, you know, I'm kind of like a finding the right couple, will they have a happy marriage together? And then negotiating through the offer is like negotiating a prenup. You know, that's sort of like how I could sometimes describe it. So if it's not the right fit, then for the candidate's perspective, you shouldn't take that role. You won't be happy. You won't be fulfilled.
Yeah. I love that matchmaker. Because that's what it is, right? It's not just like another contract. You're a matchmaker.
In some ways, yeah. And I think that sometimes people can forget sort of the human nature of what we're doing here. I'm not dealing with inventory. Mm-hmm. I'm not dealing with products. I'm dealing with people. And so there are so many benefits, but you just don't know what to expect. Sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. We can get thrown some really interesting curveballs throughout a process. You know, people are imperfect. So we are dealing with people, not products. And that's, for me, what makes the role so interesting.
People, not products. I love hearing you say that. I'm hearing a lot from different types of organizations right now that some of them are leaning more and more into culture fit, which I'm a fan of. Clearly you are. Clearly Robin is. And some of them, they don't want to admit it out loud, but they're in such a race to accomplish a certain goal that they're saying, maybe people are inventory. And again, they don't want to say it out loud, but that's what they're saying. And their people feel that. And there's an insecurity. There's a huge amount of disengagement and morale's down and all of these things. How are you noticing any sort of trends one way or the other that for organizations who are going one way with culture, other organizations are saying maybe it's not so important?
I think I'm really lucky in that the clients that I get to work with, generally, I would say 99% of them place a very high value on culture. And they demonstrate that. And one of the ways that I think that that is communicated through is actually in some of the collateral that we provide. So we provide our position profile, which is very detailed, of course. But what we also do is we blend in a video from either the hiring manager or the CEO, whoever they think is the most appropriate person, talking about the company, talking about the organization, talking about the role, talking about what they're looking for, and talking about where they're going. And so what that does is it really humanizes a position profile, and it helps a person who's making a decision, especially if somebody might currently be in a role and not necessarily looking to make a change. It helps them to make a decision as to, am I interested in this? Is this person vibing well with me? Like, do I think that we would be a good mix together? So the place that I'm actually seeing a bigger shift, and I would actually call it more of a fear, is around AI. There's lots of scary headlines out there. We're hearing lots and lots about how AI is going to take away jobs. And so as AI is coming in and as it's inevitable and we're seeing it infiltrate through organizations, there's a lot of fear there. So I think that one of the roles of a leader is to really be able to navigate that fear and navigate it with transparency, with very open communication, but also giving comfort to the fact that for many organizations, there will always be human requirements. AI is not going to dominate and take over the entire organization. Mm-hmm. And the point of bringing AI in for most organizations, their intent is actually to get rid of some of the mundane tasks that people hate doing so that they can focus their time and effort into other tasks that actually bring more to the organization, and they benefit more from those tasks as well. They enjoy those tasks more. So I think that navigating that fear is going to be a really important piece moving forward.
Yeah. You're talking about tapping into human potential, right? That fulfilling part of work, not the task work.
Mm-hmm. Like, imagine if you didn't have to do that. Imagine if all of the really mundane things that you hate about your job, like if those things could be taken away, think about what you could untap in terms of a person's potential and a person's capabilities if all of their focus could be focused on that.
Yeah. There's the optimistic side of AI, right? And I'm with you on this. I think there's so much potential here.
Exactly.
But yeah, to your point, there's a ton of fear. There's a ton of unknown. And then those leaders who are communicating transparently, people respect that. People appreciate that. And the ones who are hiding it, you're not fooling anybody.
Yeah.
Right? You're just having your whole bunch of people who are just like, crap, I'm losing my job tomorrow. How am I supposed to show up? How am I supposed to perform? How am I supposed to go home and talk to my family? Right? And your approach to just humanizing this entire experience, being transparent, building trust, the optimistic viewpoint here, which, you know, I'm a huge fan of.
I do know that. But listen, I mean, it's optimistic, but it's not unrealistic. No one is saying that there aren't concerns around AI and concerns around putting the right guards in place to make sure that AI is used responsibly and that AI is used effectively. But I think that for those who have looked into it, like, there are a lot of benefits. There is a lot of opportunity there. And I think that the unknown is where the fear is coming from. So I think that there is a lot of opportunity to maybe negate that through open and transparent communication.
Yeah. And that's going to exist for a while. That unknown is going to exist for 5, 10, 20 years, right? That's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jess, I love that you do a video from the CEO or whoever is appropriate, because I've lived that on what that can do. Because I was at an event this week and two people came up to me and said, oh, I've seen you, because the podcast goes out both video and audio. I've seen and heard you on the podcast. I feel like I know you. And I love what you speak about. I feel like we're very aligned, which is really cool to hear from someone I've never met before. And of course, that opens up the relationship and we get to know each other a little bit further. So I can see how having a video for that prospective person would allow, oh, I get a little bit of insight into the CEO and what their mind is like and what they're all about, to see if we're aligned. And maybe if you watch that video and you're not aligned, hey, we're not going to waste someone's time, right? So I think that's a really good idea. I do want to go down another path though, because as we were chatting about in your bio, you know, we've done 273 of these episodes now. You have a pretty rare background. You know, it's a combination of legal, business, people expertise. You know, you call yourself earlier a matchmaker. How does that background shape the way you approach executive search and advisory group today? Because I have to imagine it's a little bit different than traditional search, just because of your background.
Yeah, I think that it's really enhanced my ability, honestly. Like, and if we look at it, I had an undergraduate degree in business degree focused on human resources, and then my MBA was focused on finance. So I have tried to be more well-rounded in my approach generally, and I think that that resonates through. You know, you think that when you leave law that you're giving it up, but in actual fact, like, I use my legal education and my legal training every single day. I'm reviewing contracts. I am managing through specific clauses within offer letters and so on and so forth. The critical thinking that you learn in law school, like, that is something that I apply every single day. My analytical abilities, I really think I can look to my law background and experience for that as well. So those have been pieces that I've carried with me. And then I think that the talent component is so germane to what we're doing. It's really about being, I'm not interested in doing one search with an organization and then moving on. My hope and my goal is to have a long-standing relationship with them, where the more searches that we do together, the better I know them as an organization, and the better I am able to effectively tell their story in the marketplace and know who is going to be a good fit and who isn't going to be a good fit for their organization. And I think that the work that I've done in talent and my ability to sort of see that whole career So it's not just about the role that we're placing them for today. Do I think that they could move into a more senior role? Can I see them continuing to grow within the organization? What type of coaching, what type of learning and development are they going to require in order to get there? Do they have the leadership capabilities today? If not, how to help get them there? I think that that experience has really helped to shape what organizations are looking for. And I think obviously, you know, having worked within HR puts me at an advantage when I'm dealing with HR professionals within other organizations as I'm working on these searches.
Well, obviously that background has been successful, because if you're telling us that 93% after 3 years, I mean, those are fantastic numbers that anyone would be excited about, right? So yeah, so you're obviously doing the right things. We've talked a lot about business in this episode. And I don't know, maybe we'll continue to talk about business, but we are at the part of the episode where we do ask Al's signature question, which is taken over by Corey today. But it's a great question. Al didn't come up with the question, but he did bring it to the podcast. And, you know, it's funny, out of this many episodes, we get so many different answers. And sometimes it's about business, but sometimes it's about family, and sometimes it's personal. So I'd love, Corey, if you could take it away.
Let's do this. All right, Jess, there is a saying that societies grow great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So Jess, what proverbial trees are you planting through your work, through your mentorship, through your leadership, that you hope will benefit others along the way, well after your own chapter closes?
Oh, okay. I'm a very big advocate of paying it forward. So whether that is in someone is thinking about making a move in their career and they need someone to talk to, or someone has just lost their job and they're looking for that next role. We get a ton of inbounds in terms of like people who are uncertain or lost or just don't really know what the next move is and who would like to speak to somebody just to bounce things off of. And I always take those conversations. And I always make a point. I block time in my calendar to make sure that I have time for those conversations. First of all, because I think it's really important to tell people sort of what I'm seeing in the marketplace, what my experience is. If that will help guide them in making their decision, I think that that's fantastic. So almost like a mini coaching session, I guess you could call it. That's something that I make a point of doing. And I think that's something that everybody at Bedford really does make a point of doing, because we know how important it is. And because I've been that person. I've been that person who was unsure. Should I leave law? Should I make this decision? And it's a really scary place to be when you're right on the edge of a cliff. And do you jump? Do you not? So if I can help somebody and give them a little bit more confidence, or, you know, feel a little bit more comfortable in making that decision, that's something that I want to do. And yeah, I'm a big advocate of mentorship. And then again, I think that professionally, having had the opportunity to introduce organizations to fantastic people who I have seen continue to grow within that organization, again, that really does fill my bucket. But I think that that is something that you can see, like, when a decision is made within an organization by a person who you placed within that organization, and it's a landmark decision for the organization, you know that you had some small part in that. So I helped to plant a seed of a tree that has grown so fantastically and has really made a difference within the organization, within the world. And that is really fulfilling for me.
Love that. Love it.
That's a great answer. Well, on that, I think that's a great message for us to leave on. For listeners who are interested in finding more about what you're doing, Jess, what's the best way for them to reach out?
They can reach out to me on LinkedIn, or they can reach out at our Bedford website, www.bedfordgroup.com. And all my contact information is readily available there.
Well, I got to give a big thank you to Corey for this introduction, because Jess, I know this isn't our last conversation. It's not our first, but it's not our last either. I look forward to future conversations with you. We're just getting started. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Corey or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.